You're listening to Gamesforum's Mobilize and Monetize podcast. Dive into the world of mobile gaming with us as we explore the latest trends and discuss best practices.
Hello, everyone, and welcome back to the Mobilize and Monetize podcast. Now, today's conversation is all about, you know, the dark side of mobile gaming, especially pertaining to bad ads and deceptive practices. So some really interesting insights going on here. So, and, you know, who else better to talk about this than none other than the head of App Harbor, Alex Yurkimovic. Alex, welcome to the podcast. So good to have you.
Thank you so much, Mariam. It's great to be with you. I was looking forward to this one and excited to get going.
Absolutely. And Alex is going to be joining me next week on the panel, Ad Quality and App Health, our fireside chat at Games from London. So I'm really looking forward to that as well, Alex.
Yeah, likewise. That's not a first for me. I really like the Games Forum events, and I've participated in the Ad Quality panels in the past. It was extremely insightful and interesting. So definitely excited about it and looking forward to hear what the other panelists have to say. And of course, always great to spend more time with you, Mariam.
Absolutely. Yeah, fantastic. Really looking forward to it. So I kind of want to just dive in, you know, head first. And Alex, I want to ask you, the dark side of mobile gaming, you've seen firsthand how sort of deceptive practices can really mess with players. So what are some of the more, you know, dangerous examples that you've come across?
Yeah, I think the most dangerous examples are probably the ones that try to deceive the users in more sophisticated ways. And we keep seeing more and more of those coming up all the time. So these guys, you know, sometimes people make fun of fraudsters that they, you know, they use some old fashioned silly tricks, and who falls for that? You know, it's probably only grandmas, but these guys are, many of them are extremely sophisticated, and they keep coming up with new methods to fool people and deceive them. Two recent examples that we see them repeat across many different games by various studios are as follows. One, there is the update now example. So what they'll do, they'll create many clones of the same campaign that redirects to whichever random landing page. It has nothing to do with the creative. And they'll create many different update now creatives that imitate the look and feel of many popular apps which they're going to target with their campaign. And then with each popular app where they're running the campaign, they'll pop an ad that says update now in the same font and color and look and feel and design language of the menus of that app to try to make the user believe that it's the app that they love and know and use right now, telling them to update it to the latest version so they can enjoy all the bug fixes and latest versions. Little they know is that it actually redirects to an app download page of that app's largest competitor. Wow. And sometimes they don't realize, and they download the new app and switch to it. And this way, the app that they used before loses them as a user. They hijack them, they switch them to become the new user of the competitor app. So that's one very sneaky way running the update now seems very simple and innocent, but the sting here, the idea is that they literally bother to create a dedicated, unique update now creative for every single app to make it very credible that this is a message from the app rather than an ad. A second type of sophisticated deception campaigns that we see recently, which also utilize the strategy of customization of many different versions of the same ad, is the congrats winner, you deserve a reward ads.
Definitely so seen some of those.
Yeah, oh, amazing. Yeah, actually, my daughter did too. Luckily, yeah. She's ready to watch.
I think she's well trained. Yeah,
exactly, well trained from a young age. So what they'll do, they'll usually show it after you complete a level. So, you know, it kind of makes, they don't really have a way to know, but they'll try to go for full screen ads, especially rewarded video placements. Then those tend to be played between levels. So it's reasonable, it's probable that the timing will be after successfully completing a level. And it would say, congrats. Sometimes they go the extra mile to even customize it to the game vertical. So if you'll be playing a blackjack app, it would say, congrats, blackjack player. You just won a, you just completed the level successfully. Click here to redeem your reward. And they're sneaky because they do two tiers of deception and customization. One, they'll refer to the game vertical in the ads. So again, congrats poker winner, congrats match three winner, and then it adds credibility that it's associated with the app that you're playing. But secondly, they'll also itself, its entire look and feel. Yeah, all the colors, all the fonts in the brand languages are well-known brands. So they'll really make it look like it's a message from McDonald's with their colors on font or Walmart. And what that does, it makes the user believe that whichever reward they just won and needs to be redeemed is coming from some very well-known and credible brands such as Walmart and McDonald's. And that, yet again, gives them even more confidence. Okay, I finished the level. It congratulates me for winning a poker game. It offers me a reward from McDonald's. Seem pretty legit. And then not only that they'll click through, but depending where they'll be redirected, because of course it's completely random. There's nothing at all in common between the landing page and the creative. You could be redirected to an app install ad, but in the worst case scenario, you can be redirected to some website, which now tries to proceed with scamming you a bit further, try to have you connect your Facebook account to hack it or insert your credit card number to steal it. So by having also the landing page and that same look and feel of Walmart or McDonald's, they increase the credibility and make people more likely to fall for it.
Interesting. It seems like it's gone, you know, extra sophisticated, but on the lines of, you know, manipulation, you know all too well, you know, there's a fine line between monetization and manipulation. So how can devs make bank without crossing that line and, you know, potentially alienating their players?
Yeah, that's a good question. I've seen different approaches from my different companies. Sometimes it depends on their sub-vertical. For example, hyper-casual, not to generalize too broadly. Of course, there are exceptions, but usually, or in some most cases, the hyper-casual studios are a bit more lenient with it. They're more very oriented to the KPIs. If in the bottom line, our revenues are good, or we made some change and it improved the revenue, we're fine with it. So there, it's sometimes, again, depending on the studio, willing to eat or absorb some user churn or some bad complaints on the account of aggressive ads, as long as that ad setup in the bottom line generates them the greatest LTV and average revenue per player, because, you know, it does pay more for the users that don't churn and then stick around and don't complain. Other studios really do care about, you know, their ratings and their reputation and how clean their apps are considered and how people perceive it and tell about the user and ad experience in their apps. Ear to mouth, and they're, you know, of course they care about KPIs, but they're not obsessed in it, in the sense that if I block the campaign, I want to make sure that it also increases my revenue by decreasing churn and doesn't hurt my revenues, because maybe that was the highest paying advertiser, which pays a lot because their ads are shady. Yeah. And whoever fills instead of them, whichever ads come instead, pay less. So you know what? I don't care. I really don't want that shady ad in my app. And even if it loses me a cent, I believe that in the long term, it's more beneficial and good for building a sustainable business with good reputation and brand name. So it's really a gray area. I think it goes not only studio by studio, but even case by case between different studios, depending on the app and campaign. I think the more important thing here is just to be on top of it and make conscious decisions and not take random decisions. And if I try to connect it with what we do at App Harbor, sometimes I get a question from a prospect. Look, okay, so you'll help me block this campaign of my competitor, but what if I find out that it actually hurts my ad revenues because my competitor consists of significant portions of my revenues? My answer is, look, we're about control. We're not making the decisions for you. I'm not telling you whether you should block your competitor or not. This
Yes.
is for you to see, and we're happy to look at the KPIs with you and, you know, plan the best test to run that will give you definite conclusions and help you make the conclusions based on the data set. But I'm not a decision-making machine. I'm a machine that gives you visibility over
right.
what ads you get and control. Because without us, you can't block your competitor even if you want to. It's not an option.
Right.
With us, you can plan a clever A-B test, block it for half of your users, keep it unblocked for the other half of your users, and of course, keep the two groups very similar in terms of distribution by country, by device, by whichever other metrics you track. Block this for half of your users for 1 week, 2 weeks, review the results. And now that you have the full picture and you have, you know, a big sample of reliable data and you have all the different elements, both your, you know, the impact, direct impact on KPIs like retention and CPM, but also the aspect of your reputation, how the user reviews look like for the two different groups and so on. And now make a educated and data-driven decision, whether you're blocking it or not. You can even a month or 2 months later revalidate it and run another test and see if the same results persist or now something else happens and you may change your decision. But the bottom line is, more than having some you know, strict general rules written by stone, I say stay on top of it, judge it case by case, and
right.
utilize whichever tools you have at hand to have control and visibility to make the best decision considering all variables ad hoc. This is probably the most healthy response to make the best decision in the largest number of different cases.
Interesting stuff. So, you know, obviously we can't have this conversation without talking about ads. So let's talk about ads. We've, you know, we've all been there in terms of intrusive, irrelevant ads that ruin the game experience. I mean, you know, so many games have a drop-off point because of this very thing. So how do you think that these bad ads impact game studios' bottom line and player loyalty? What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, in fact, I have a pretty good idea because we have a large variety of customers that suffer from completely different pains and encounter different challenges because they have different situations. You know, the type of ads you get will vary differently depending on what type of app you are. So a casual game is targeted by a completely different ads from a dating app or a news app. And it depends who's your ad mediation solution and which ad networks do you mediate through that mediation solution, in what countries your users are, and which ad formats you utilize. These are already five very impactful variables, and there are many others. And since each customer has a different blend of those, we have a pretty large and good sample that gives us a good representation of the overall state in the industry. And I can say that the main points where the bottom line, the pockets of the app studios are hurt by bad ads are as follows, the top three by far. And the number one problem is LTV, which is caused on the hand by on extent by retention. What that means, if you consistently have bad ads, which it doesn't matter what bad about them, whether it's the content that upsets the user or it's some sort of disruptive behavior that prevents them from using the ad as they wish, or maybe they were scammed by some app and literally you know, the user was hurt because their Facebook account was hacked or their credit card number was stolen. No matter what type of bad ad caused them a bad experience, they're likely as a result to use your app less, to have shorter sessions, or to stop using it altogether. That means that you lose all the additional revenues that you will get from that player, whether if it's in-app purchases or whether if it's all the additional ads that they would see through the remainder of their life cycle with your app. All of these impressions are lost, and as a result, you lose all the revenue for them. So number one is LTV as a result of user churn that hurts retention. Number two, it's pretty similar, but there's a subtle difference there. That is lowering the immediate revenues by hurting the ARPDAU, the average revenue per daily active user. What mainly hurts these revenues are ads that abruptly cut the session short without the user wanting to. There are different things that are doing it, but right now in the industry, by far the most common issue is the unskippable interstitials. So your mid-session, you'll get a full screen ad, which you can't close. That's it, you're in a deadlock. You have to close the app. Other similar issues are ads that automatically redirect the user to the landing page. So once again, so you're kicked out of your of the app that you're using right now against your will. Yeah. And finally, ads that make the app crash or freeze. Once again, you want it to keep playing, but the app crashes. All of these cases cut sessions short. So the principle is a bit similar, but retention from the previous point is long-term. This is short-term. I was using the app right now. I would use it for 15 minutes and would see 15 rewarded ads or interstitials that would accumulate revenues for the publisher. But I was kicked out of the app after 2 minutes. I didn't bother to reopen it. So therefore, you lost 13 of the 15 impressions you would have gotten from me, and that hurts the average revenue per user. The last mechanism where publishers really get hurt are by the interaction of the users with the app. What I mean is two things. One is, or I can actually group these two issues together under user complaints. Unhappy users complain, and it hurts you directly. One way in which it hurts is via one-star reviews on the store. Apps with bad user experience because of ads get many one-star reviews of this of users complaining about bad ads. It lowers the average store rating. It Right. means that they're much less likely to be featured than the stores, and it hurts their ASO and discoverability. They'll be much lower in lists of, you know, apps you might like that the store shows for user, and it lowers the number of their organic installs, which, you know, in the long term also impacts their revenues and LTV. Another problem is operational pain. Whenever an app gets many complaints from ads via their support tickets, they want to solve these problems. If users send them screenshots of some very inappropriate ad, they need to investigate. They need to understand when this ad is coming from. They need to talk to ad networks to have it blocked. That is time consuming. Every second that they invest in solving these problems, or how we call it, putting out fires, being the fire department, is 1 second they don't generate new money. Is a second that they don't optimize their own ad campaigns. Is a second that they don't test a new ad network that could bring a revenue uplift or implement a new ad format or even new in-app purchase flows. And that is a big pain, because in many of the companies that we work with, when they first came to us, around 80 to 90% of their ad ops team went on being the fire department. And we managed to automate many of these processes and save the vast majority of this time, which can be a very big transition and a very big revenue uplift for that company, where suddenly their ad ops team becomes free to optimize and generate new money.
Okay, Alex, you presented us with a very thorough sort of ranked list of, you know, how these bad ads impacting game studios. But now, you know, we want to hear from you. What's the solution? And how do you think mediation networks can better leverage their potential to, you know, enhance ad quality and also drive revenue for game studios while, like, counteracting these things?
Yeah, that's a great question. Thank you, Aaron. I think mediation solutions, of course, would very much want to give their publishers the best ad experience they can and have, you know, thanks to that, more business and have a great reputation. And they do their best within what's reasonable for them from the business perspective. And what I mean is there's a certain level of control and a bit of transparency that's easy to reach with a reasonable effort, with a small effort. And that's the level that all the mediation companies reach with efforts that are, again, reasonable for them commercially. And by the way, the reason that they're pretty much equal is also lack of motivation for them to go the extra mile. Because if one of them was behind and losing business to their competitors on that account, it would make sense to step up. But if all of them are pretty much equal and every month, you know, a couple of publishers are sick of the ad quality with one of them and switch to the other, but to make the opposite way around and kind of offset it, it doesn't give you the extra motivation. But coming back to my point, to give reasonable ad quality is easy. To give top-notch ad quality, to complete these extra, whichever random number I'll say, 30%, that's already a very substantial effort. That's That's having your own ad quality company. It's hiring dozens of people. It's spending months in development before the product is ready to market. It's constantly maintaining it. It's an entire company, which
Right.
doesn't make sense to have as a shift of focus from your core business.
Right.
And this is where we came in. We're the first one who raised this glove and opened a dedicated business for this. We had a large dev team working on the product for months before it came to market. We have a large dev team now maintaining this product, catching up with the latest versions of the SDKs of all the different ad networks, releasing features that help us tackle all the new ad quality issues that pop up every month. It's an entire operation to manage, which is, you know, very time consuming and cost a lot of resources. So unless someone else disagrees with me and, you know, puts this effort, probably this is the way to manage it, to have a business that's its sole focus and core, and that's what they do every day in order to do it to a sufficient level to really reach this area of, you know, 99.9% accuracy and detection rate. And this is what we strive for at Up Harbor. And luckily for us, so far, at least based on the customer feedback, we manage to pull it off. Now, more specifically regarding the how, it's all about control. You just need to find the ways to, one, accurately manage to detect what's coming, manage to analyze in real time or in milliseconds, what is the ad that came through, what it shows, and whether what it shows violates the policy of the publisher, how it behaves, and whether something in its behavior, like a pop-up or playing sound, violates the policy of the publisher. And finally, is this ad malicious? Is it objectively bad for everyone? Again, trying to steal credit card number or to phishing your Instagram password. And once you're able to give the publisher visibility on everything that's going on, so they can tell you this I want, this I don't want, and B, once you have the capacity to enforce their restrictions, so if they tell you I don't want pop-ups, actually have the technology to identify 100% or close to it from pop-ups and prevent them from taking place in real time, that is the key to success. And it all comes down to the same two pillars that I always talk about for having a successful user experience and an effective ad quality strategy for your app. Is one, visibility, the ability to know what's going on, to have that transparency, and B, control. Once you see something and you decided, yes, I want it, no, I don't want it, or I want to run an A-B test to decide whether I want it, to have the effective tools to control it, to actually say, I'm blocking it for half of the users, these users, and I'm not blocking it for this other half, and for it to actually work. So now you can run that test and draw your conclusions.
Right. So, Alex, I want to ask you, you know, you mentioned you guys are the experts in this space. And as we all know, you know, metrics are everything in mobile gaming. So in your sort of opinion and the advice that you can give, how can game studios sort of measure the impact of ad quality on their bottom line? And what kind of data should they be looking at? What are the key sort of factors that they should be paying attention to?
Yeah. So in that sense, actually, my previous answer was a great hook for this because I can kind of piggyback ride it and give a shorter answer. So we discussed about some of the largest damages as a result of bad ads. And I mentioned a few KPIs that could get hurt, such as LTV, retention, ARPDAU. And the last one is a bit more difficult to quantify. It's not only the user complaints, how many one-star reviews I get that mention ads, how many complaints my support team gets that talk about ads, but also you know, how getting rid of the bad ads impact them. So these are all the KPIs that we recommend to track. The key KPIs, again, to my previous answer, may vary depending on the type of publisher, what's their vertical, their mediation, ad formats, and so on. Based on those, they may encounter different challenges that hurt different KPIs. Thus, two different studios may see the greatest value and the greatest improvement in two completely different KPIs. But in the bottom line, it will make sense for the both of them to use an ad quality tool, because in the end it increases the revenues by whether via it's by operational efficiency optimization or whether by its reducing churn rate and improving retention. Finally, whenever we run a trial with a new prospect, and we're happy to offer free trials because we're really confident in our ability to deliver. We have a great conversion rate from a free trial to a paying customer, so we're more than happy to offer that. So as we plan the trial, this is part of the journey we do together with the customer to make sure that they have the most effective and custom-tailored trial for their needs. We understand what are the pains, what are the impacted KPIs, and together, based on that, we figure out what is the best way to configure our tool to address their main pains. And then throughout the trial, not only that, we remain in constant touch and check with them how these KPIs are impacted and whether we need to perform any tweaks in the configurations while the trial is still ongoing to get better results by the end of it. Because maybe in the middle, we saw that it's still suboptimal, but we can make a few tweaks, run another iteration that's much better. We also feed the publisher with a lot of information from our side that further increases the, you know, gives them a more full picture for more data-driven decisions. So things we can share are, for example, many statistics of the violations that we see in their app, what ads violate their ad policy, what are the violation types, which ad networks they're coming from, how they break down by country, by ad format, and so on. Finally, we can give them many examples of specific campaigns that bluntly violate their policy and serve to their users millions of times per day, and they may not be aware of it. So by showing these specific campaigns, it both underlines the, you know, the magnitude of their negative impact and our capability to accurately and effectively detect them and get rid of them, which is another important factor for an effective trial and the decision making of the prospect.
Really interesting stuff, Alex. And last question for you here, and I'm sure you're going to be talking about this more on our panel next week, but where do you see the future of ad quality control heading in mobile gaming? And, you know, what sort of steps is App Harbor taking?
This is a very important question. I get a lot of conflicting views on it from experts that I really value and respect. So that's enough telling that it's all up in the air. And
I can imagine,
Our field is in general, you know, volatile. You can run a huge test that another industry takes half a year in like, you know, 1 week or 2 days and get very clear conclusions. So that's exciting, but that also adds to the long-term uncertainty of our, right, for industry. If I'll take out my crystal ball, my personal crystal ball, and try to give my personal projection, I wish I had something more optimistic or dramatic, like, you know, all issues will be solved,
yeah,
or some special turning point in the way that will completely turn things around. To me, I'm afraid that it's very difficult to break the cycle of fraudsters coming up with the new, more sophisticated types of fraud to bypass all the existing quality control tools. And then us, you know, trying to make our best to not stay behind and respond super fast and be the first ones to detect any new type of sophisticated attack or fraud method and release a feature to solve it, you know, within days in the best case, or weeks in the worst case. Unfortunately, it's a never-ending circle. You know, people ask why, like, who sits and bothers to come up with these new frauds and methods, or why someone do it? Who on earth thinks that this stupid, you know, ad moves someone? The answer is it's driven by the same power that drives many things in our capitalist world: money. If someone bothered to do this stupid-looking ad, it means it's profitable for them.
It's working, right?
It's working. It means that enough people fall for it, and they get enough money from each person that falls for it for them to put all this time into investigating our solutions and writing, you know, new sophisticated code to do something that right now won't be cutting the net. In the end, the ad industry is already hundreds of billions in dollars of you know annually, and it grows year by year. There is a lot of money to collect if you're a sophisticated fraudsters, and whenever there's opportunity to make money, whether if it's legal or illegal, people will always take it. Especially with our industry, that's pretty forgiving. Unfortunately, still virtual crimes aren't treated as harshly as real life crimes. So
these
fraudsters don't face much consequence, right?
Yeah.
The campaign will be shut down, and their threat is now taken care of. So they'll lose the income, but no one will try them. No one will
right.
you know imprison them. So the risk is low. So yeah, unfortunately, the shorter answer. I anticipate all the existing fraud methods will keep running, and new ones will keep appearing all the time, and it will just be an endless chase of cat and mouse. For the good guys to try and close, you know, every door that the bad guys open, and then the bad guys, you know, will take a sledgehammer and make a hole in the wall to get through that, which we then.
And that's where you guys come in, protecting and saving us all.
We're the repairing crew that comes to
yeah, exactly.
I just wish ourselves to stay, you know, vigorous and energetic and vigilant, and just be fast with repairing all the holes, because preventing them from the get-go, my personal opinion, mission impossible.
Right. Fantastic to have you, Alex. That was such a fascinating conversation. Thank you so much for your time, and really look forward to seeing you next week on our panel.
Thank you so much for having me, Mariam. I had a great time talking to you as always, and I can't wait for the panel next week.
And that was it for this week's Mobilize Monetize podcast. Thank you so much to everyone listening.